the issue is that this kind of irredentist nationalism essentially has no limitations, because the Chinese government can also argue that places like Vladivostok is also part of Asian China and that should be taken back as soon as possible in the future when it's strong enough to claim that. So from your study, is there any way out?
So actually, one of the big things from that I've gained from putting the writing the book in the first place and then doing the having gone through the translation, is I'm often reminded of how risky nationalism can be, especially this nationalism based on certain ideas of ethnic unity, certain ideas of territorial claims, because it does open the way for this irredentism that we talked about. It does open the way for more stridency. Now, the way out, of course, is to reconfigure what it means to be a citizen. If there's some move towards a more sort of accommodating set of values where you say, okay, well, maybe what it means to be a country, if people are willing, it's sort of to be willing to sort of voluntarily with consent to be part of it, right? Then this may take some of those pressures away. But unfortunately, I don't see the current Chinese regime going in that direction.
So what would you advise like people from Taiwan to respond?
So I think, I don't know, that our friends from Taiwan are very much capable of deciding for themselves. But I would say if maintaining space and autonomy is important for them, then it's probably key to sort of keep bolstering their institutions, including their military. It is also key to have strong relations outside, even if it's unofficial. So this includes ties with Japan and the US. But most importantly, I think, is to have a clear sense of who they are and who they want to be. So this idea that Taiwan is centered on certain universal values of democracy, human rights, I mean, that is, those sorts of positive values are what will hold people together, because it gives them something that they value, that they think is important and they need to defend in ways that are not like the sort of, some idea of blood, is some idea of soil, which that sort of right-wing bent, for me, is pretty disturbing. So, keep to the path, bolster and strengthen democracy.
So finally, back to my hometown, Hong Kong. You once worked there, right?
And yes, I'm very fond of Hong Kong.
Do you have some memories of Hong Kong, the old Hong Kong, the real one that is gone for good? So how do you think about the latest developments there?
I mean, what's happened with Hong Kong, obviously, makes me quite sad. I really like the people of Hong Kong. I think they're very enterprising. I think they have a certain very open-minded willingness to try things out, and they've not been in a way sort of particularly troublemaking. They just, I think, wanted to have the promises made to them kept, and so the way that they've been treated, I think, is very unfortunate, and it's going to be very, very tough for them going forward. Now, as you point out, I think in the short term, given the trajectory that Beijing wants to go, it's really hard for them for people in Hong Kong to find the space that they really deserve. And that makes me sad. But I think, again, it's important to remember, what it's important to hold on to. If there is a vision of a better Hong Kong, if that's still possible, it's something to hold on to aspire to work towards. That may not, the opportunities for this may not arise in the short term. Of course, there are efforts to change the education system and so on and so forth. But these sorts of outside efforts to shape and reshape society, the world has seen before. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't. And in times where the sort of local sentiment prevails is when people are able to tell themselves, you know, there's something else that they want to do. There's something else that is important to them. I mean, if you look at, say, the relationship between Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom, that's pretty long and drawn out, you know, several hundred years. But, you know, there was some chance. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, it has, that length of time has to apply to Hong Kong. But the point is that the sentiment that there should be separate, there should be some uniqueness, can historically, you know, last for some time.
Mm-hmm. There are many examples mentioned in your book. That of Hong Kong, in your opinion.
I beg your pardon? I lost the last bit of your sentence.
There are many examples from history mentioned in your book. Anyone that is comparable to the case of Hong Kong and to its future?
So, so Hong Kong, I don't know, I think Hong Kong is a fairly unique case. Because it has a strong sense of its own identity, that but it was not a sort of completely self-ruling entity before. So it had a lot of autonomy in some respects, but it was not seen as separate, whether you know this was under British rule or whether this is under Chinese rule. So that makes it somewhat distinct, but it does have a very strong sense of self. So in this case, you know, I would think of experiences like, say, Ireland, again, sparse population, but people who had a strong sense of who they wanted to be. You might think of the sort of example that people threw out is Singapore, because again, Singapore did not have a past as a sort of independent nation, unless you're going back several hundred years to Temasek. Now, so this sort of idea that there can be a sort of building of a, you know, different path forward, I think, you know, for all Hong Kong's uniqueness, there are some references that we can possibly make. It's hard to make these sort of parallels, because I think historically speaking, we are at a very different point, right, with the different kinds of technologies for surveillance, for control, for managing information than, you know, what previously existed. So, yeah, yes, there are alternatives around, but I think even though there are some, you know, examples that may look somewhat similar, Hong Kong's path may be a bit different, but that's not neither good or bad, right? Because I'm just saying that it, you know, there are possibilities they can explore.
As you mentioned, the role of technology, that's a very interesting point. As some of our friends are starting to think about the possibilities of a strong Hong Kong diaspora communities over the world, that should be assisted by the high-tech developments and internet and this kind of virtual connection.
Right.
So how effective could that be, in your opinion?
So that actually could work, right? So if there are ways to connect, there are ways to draw people together, and to keep a sense of identity going, that can actually work. I mean, of course, the other sort of perhaps more out there examples, you think about Israel, right? Where it was very diasporic for a long time before there was the creation of the modern state of Israel. So to have connections, to have ways to keep alive traditions, sort of common imagination. If we think about imagined communities, you know, they actually exist across time and space, right? So there's, with technologies now, what newspapers were before, other technologies may replace them, right? So there are ways, I think, to keep the sort of commonality going. And I guess if you look at the experience of Taiwanese during martial law, how they went with how many diasporic Taiwanese sort of kept their movement going. That's another sort of example, less technologically advanced, but possible. So with more enhancements now, perhaps possibilities are greater.
If I recall correctly, your Prime Minister Yi, if I recall correctly, your Prime Minister Yi had once mentioned that the very existence of Singapore is not guaranteed. So in the long run, maybe the political entity called Singapore will be disappear. I can't recall the exact wording, but I think that's roughly what he meant. So if that really happens, do you think the Singaporean identity can still survive? And likewise, how about the other similar identities? Without plans, without a visible political entity, could the identity still survive?
Well, so, I mean, there are lots of examples of strong identities that don't have, that they're not centered in place. So you think about, you know, people who are Catholic, right? There's this idea of the Vatican, but there's certain traditions, right, that keep this, you know, billion people somehow identifying commonly across large expanses of time and space. Now, for Singapore, I actually think the sense of Singaporean identity is, there's effort to build it up, but I think it still needs more work for it to survive a sort of catastrophic event, right? Because a lot of what Singapore identity is built around is about what it's not, rather than what is. So by negation, yes, you say you're not a lot of things, but then when you have to turn around and say, what are we holding on to, then it becomes less clear.
Which means without the visible state, the identity would be much weaker than we have expected.
I think it would be much weaker than Taiwan or Hong Kong, because for that, I think the imagination, yes, there is a place that's rooted in a place, but there are certain values, there are certain ideas of language, Cantonese or Taiwanese, whereas that's not so present in Singapore, right? For us, it's, we are not Malaysian, I'm not Indonesian. Okay, we are multilingual, but a lot of this is less defined than I think in the Hong Kong or the Taiwanese case.
But Singlish is also pretty unique, right?
Well, Singlish is unique, and it is a marker. But Singlish has always had a very ambivalent relationship with people in Singapore. So on the one hand, it's viewed as a marker of class, the way that you speak Singlish matters. Sometimes the state sees Singlish as somehow less acceptable or not as befitting as a sort of educated, city-state ought to represent itself. So that ambivalence, I think, puts Singlish in a much weaker position.
Because all the questions that we have asked are exactly the ones that are very much concerned by our friends. I didn't ask the question very explicitly, but I think they'll get it regarding the comparison with Hong Kong and Taiwan. So finally, actually, 你識講廣東話嘅。 So,
不如你用廣東話同我哋香港朋友講幾句，有乜嘢前路可以勸勉一下？簡單前路，我唔敢講啦，因為我始終都係一個新加坡人啊，好多香港嘅嘢，你哋香港其實自己都好清楚，比我清楚好多好多。我覺得重要嘅話，香港人就係留住自己嘅價值觀，自己對於自由民主同埋作為香港人講粵語啊、粵語文化呢啲嘢，如果可以收住嘅話咧，對香港keep 住香港就係之後發展嘅機會會大啲。
Thank you so much. As I've mentioned, it's very difficult to find a friend from Singapore who is as outspoken and frank as you. So I do hope what you've mentioned would be very much appreciated and respected in our society, not only among our fellow peers in Hong Kong, but also the senior friends from the government, as they should get it in the first place.
I'm always very glad to have the opportunity to speak with you, Simon. And yeah, it's as you know, I'm very fond of Hong Kong, and I really hope Hong Kong and its people all the best.
Thanks so much. Pleasure meeting you. Hope we can still meet each other in Hong Kong and Singapore.
Yes, I certainly hope so.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.